The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Fox News off the air, maybe we can turn it around. Hello, welcome to the Green Front. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. And though there's never a lack of things to talk about, whether it's what's going on with the weather, what's going on in politics, what's going on in the media, and can you believe how surreal things are getting? I looked up and while I was making dinner the other day, saw Michelle Bachmann on television, and I heard her say, with earthquakes in Washington, D.C., and floods and hurricanes and tornadoes, God is trying to tell us something. And I stopped breathing. I opened my eyes real wide. I listened, and I thought, oh, my God, is she finally going to say climate change is real? Did she have a wake-up call? Did she have an eco-epiphany? No. She said it's a sign from God that the federal government is spending too much money. So let's cut back on FEMA, which is trying to stay afloat because they're spending so much money dealing with all these emergencies, many of them caused by natural and some unnatural, meaning human-caused disasters. And there's no shortage of them this week, of course, Hurricane Irene costing lives, costing millions of dollars. In fact, the insurance industry is saying that this could be the most costly of all the catastrophes we've seen in the nation's history. And, of course, the natural catastrophes are just getting worse, and the damage and the death toll is mounting. They're saying that this is because a lot of the damage from Irene was caused not by winds but by flooding, and a lot of people do not have flood insurance in their standard policies. They're saying this could cost from $7 billion to $10 billion, and that is not so surprising when you think how wide a swath it really covered along the East Coast. But you have to wonder, all those conservatives talking about how we're spending too much money when these disasters are costing more and more money, if they don't care about the environment, they don't care about our energy reserves, they do care about the bottom line, or so they say. So it's all kind of on a collision course, I'd say. And we're going to be covering the other big news of the week. You didn't necessarily see it on the evening news, although we're starting to see some coverage. I'm speaking, of course, about the tar sands action continuing to take place in our nation's capital, the civil disobedience campaign outside the White House, where some 140 people, including, by the way, NASA scientist Dr. James Hansen, have been arrested. Some 15 faith leaders arrested as well as they welcome President Obama back from his vacation. They were sitting in front of his home, the White House, that would be, of course. So far, some 595 people have been arrested, could be up to 600 by now, and some 100 people are sitting in today, at last I checked. Now, that is all about the Keystone XL pipeline, finally starting to get some media attention. In the last few days, it was featured on the New York Times on the front page, Huffington Post, of course, covering it, and even showing up on CNN and a few other stations. Of course, the Green Front, this program has been on it from the start, been covering green news for 15 years, and that's about how long I've known Michael Kieschnick, who is one of my first guests today. Very pleased to welcome him to the Green Front. If you've not heard of him, you certainly know of Working Assets and their great progressive work, as well as Credo, their action part of their business, Credo Mobile, and he is the CEO, and we're also going to be joined by Elijah Zarlin. He is with Credo as well. Interestingly, he was President Obama's lead writer before he was president. That way back in 2008, he was writing all those fundraising emails that really were so successful that many people have credited, you know, what happened on the internet with getting President Obama into office and raising all those millions of dollars that did make a difference. He was in the Chicago headquarters, and he was just arrested briefly along with Michael Kieschnick in D.C. They are back in the Bay Area, but going to be talking to them in just a second and find out more about their experience and what it feels like to be there and what is likely to happen next, that protest continuing through this weekend. And then in our second half, we'll be speaking with my favorite blogger, that is D.R. Tucker. He fills my inbox daily with 10 to 15 stories, clips, video clips, things that he aggregates from across the web on the most outrageous atrocities. I call them the climate capers, and again, it would be comical if it weren't so darn serious in terms of the implications. So he'll be joining us with his favorite top 10 list of the week. But now, pleased to welcome Michael Kieschnick and Elijah Zarlin to the Green Front. Thanks for being with me.
Delighted to be here.
And thanks for being in Washington, D.C., putting your money where your mouth is, your feet where your conscience is, your values where they, you know, are, have been for so long. And this has been, you know, quite a protest in terms of, I think, thousands of people by now must have been participating. And Credo, of course, did a big call to action and got a pretty great response, I'd say. So let's begin with you, Michael, since you are the head of working assets in Credo, and not your usual CEO, I might add. What drove you to really make this a big issue? Why is it so important, and why is the pressure really on President Obama more so than, you know, other issues that have to go through Congress?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that James Hansen was there. I mean, he's really one of the climate heroes, and we've been following him, well, for decades. And when he says that it's essentially game over for global warming if we fully develop the tar sands, you have to pay attention. So Credo's been fighting this pipeline for some time now. I mean, it's not a brand new issue, but what has made it so completely different is that it's entirely in the hands of President Obama. Here's our first president who was elected on a platform of fighting global warming, spoke about it eloquently. Millions of environmentalists voted for him, and it's up to him now. He, without any review by Congress, can say no to the pipeline. So that's really what drove Elijah and I, and I have to say hundreds of other Credo folks, not employees but our activists, to sign up to be arrested. I mean, it's a moment of great clarity, and we wanted to make sure that when he looked out the window that he knew we were there.
And we'll talk a bit more about Credo in just a minute. But, Elijah, you must be disappointed in President Obama, since you were not just a volunteer but actually a paid worker. I'm sure you put in weeks, if not months, of hard work in Chicago believing in this man. And while he has done some good things on the environmental front, it's really not been nearly enough. You know, it's been more around the margins than actually the kind of real conviction and turnaround that we needed and so many of us expected from him.
Yeah, I'm definitely disappointed, and, you know, I'm not the only one. I think that much is really clear from what we've seen at this protest. You know, and the type of energy that we saw in the campaign, and, you know, the type of optimism and about, you know, about the future and people's willingness to get involved and work for this guy, you know, on so many levels. You know, I think that that's reflective of this protest now, and people are going even further and saying, you know, that they're willing to, you know, literally place their freedom on the line, you know.
Speaking of freedom on the line, it looks like we may have got Michael off the line momentarily.
Michael is still here.
Okay.
I'm still here,
too. Hopefully the studio is on the line, because I'm here, so I don't know who else that would have been. Okay, well, we're still on, so let's continue with that. Yes, a lot of people are disappointed with President Obama, many environmentalists, but, of course, since you worked for him, that makes the story, you know, just that much more interesting. Do you think, Elijah, that, you know, if President Obama is reelected, he will do a lot more on the energy front? Will he finally find his green roots and get in touch with his green conscience and do what, you know, we really believe he knows needs to be done. I mean, I think he gets it. It's just that he has been so co-opted, not to, you know, excuse him, but we all know what's going on with the impasse and with Congress these days, and the second term might just, you know, bring out his courage, one would hope.
You know, it's possible, but it's something that I can't be confident about at this point, given what he said, you know, he was going to do on the campaign, and you know, what he's done so far in his administration. And I think that's why this is such a big moment. This is really a large test, because this project is insane, and you know, it's not just maintaining sort of the status quo. It's going even further to keep us addicted to oil that I think most people understand is not, you know, tenable for the future. And so this is really a moment of how far will we go. And given how easy it is for him to just draw a line here, If he can't do that, I think, you know, what he does in a future administration is really uncertain.
And there's not a lot of people, you know, just in my daily life in Mill Valley, I think you live here too, Michael, talking about tar sands. So I always ask my friends, are you following this? And so many of them don't know anything about it. My 16-year-old daughter at the dinner table last night asked what's going on with the tar sands when I mentioned that I was going to be covering it again. I said, oh, great, how do you know about it, sweetie? And she said, well, they were shutting down BART. They were protesting at the BART stations, and if there's a demonstration in D.C., why are they doing that here? And I said, well, because this is something everybody needs to be concerned about across the nation, and, of course, we have a lot of wonderful activism alive and well here in the Bay Area. So she said, well, you know, why are they drilling there? And I said, well, I think it's in large part because we're running out of oil, and they're going ever deeper out into the ocean and deeper into mucky tar sands where it's more expensive, the cost, you know, much higher to the environment. And she said, well, what do they say is the reason? Because they probably don't want to admit that. And I said, well, that's a good question. So, Michael, what would you say you've heard, you know, on the part of the, there's commercials all over television saying that this is something we should do and that the emissions are the same as the usual extraction methods for oil, as if that's, you know, a pretty picture.
Almost always the answer is talking about fear of the Middle East. So why not substitute oil from a friendly neighbor, Canada, for oil from the Middle East? That's almost always what it is. And, of course, what that leaves off the table is, well, why not just reduce our need for oil? The cost of reducing the need for oil through efficiency and renewables is much cheaper than the cost of building a pipeline. And, of course, it's simply not true that the CO2 released by drilling in the Middle East is less than the cost of heating up the tar sands, releasing CO2, and then burning it. It's probably three times higher. So I think that the answer that most people are giving is simply false. It's sort of an example of just how corrupt Washington has become, that the chief lobbyist for TransCanada, the company developing the pipeline, was the deputy campaign manager for Hillary Clinton, who's running the State Department that just released the final environmental assessment. So we need to put the facts on the table. I'm hopeful that President Obama will do the right thing. He can't complain about Congress. Lobbyists really shouldn't have any voice. It's just an issue of moral clarity. He knows what he's doing. He's told us over and over again, give the process a chance. Read the environmental impact statement. What's left is the State Department has to release a discussion of whether or not it's in the national interest. They looked very narrowly at the environmental impacts of the pipeline itself, not really at what happens if you burn all the dirty oil. It's clearly in the national interest not to do it. I have to say, just looking at the newspaper today, there might have been a tipping point. So the Republican governor of Nebraska, which is one of the places that the pipeline has to go through, came out against it today. He called on President Obama to deny the permit. He said very carefully, I'm not against having a pipeline, but I don't want it to go where it goes now, which would likely lead to oil spills, which would pollute the biggest water aquifer in the whole Midwest. So to have the Republican governor of Nebraska join us, not in being arrested, but speaking out against the pipeline, is a wonderful thing.
That is good news, and thanks for sharing that, Michael. On the discouraging side, again, when a reporter asked Obama's press secretary, you know, what Obama's opinion was about the protests, the press secretary said he hasn't talked to the president about it yet. Do you think they can continue to ignore this all the way through Saturday when I hope there will be a culmination of the demonstration?
Oh, I don't think they're ignoring it at all. I think that almost the job of a press secretary is not to talk to and brief the president so that he or she can, you know, say plausibly denials just like that. I'm confident from my own conversations that it is being discussed in the White House. They do look out the window. It doesn't mean that they like it. They quite clearly don't like it. So they know it's there. Other people are briefing the president on it, and he knows he's going to have to make a decision.
And, you know, the State Department released that environmental impact report saying that it would be no significant environmental impact, and yet I understand it did not mention climate change once. That seems pretty myopic.
Well, the State Department is not known for doing good environmental impact statements. The first two drafts that came out were just brutally savaged by the Environmental Protection Agency. So I think you can tell what the State Department wants. It's just an odd legal requirement that they're the ones who do it. So no, it's a terrible one. They are myopic. It's pretty clear that Hillary wants to do it. That's why we went to the White House rather than the State Department. In the end, it's up to President Obama.
And either one of you can answer this. What do you just think, just to step back a minute, of this crazy, you know, anti-science approach that pretty much all the Republican candidates for president are taking? Can you believe what you're hearing and seeing? I mean, it's surreal comes to mind. These are grown men and women saying, you know, they don't believe 98% of the world's climate scientists, as if, you know, Sean Hannity and some of these extreme right-wing media and, you know, political personalities know more than the world's climate scientists, and yet they're getting away with it. I mean, if you look at opinion polls over the last year or two, you know, fewer Americans are concerned about climate change when, in fact, it is the great biggest threat to everything, you know, we hold dear. And yet it's not dominating the national discussion, and I think that's partly because of the dominance of, you know, right-wing radio and television and Fox Media. I mean, this is my particular passion, and it gets overlooked a lot that, you know, media does have influence, and that they're getting away with it and laughing all the way to the bank and, you know, just completely spitting in the face of science is outrageous, isn't it?
Well, so Betsy, let's just imagine that your show had the 25 million listeners that Rush Limbaugh has.
If only.
Just for a moment. Then I think we can be pretty sure that those 25 million listeners would know the global warming is real, the scientists have done good work, and so forth and so on. I think that the combination of Fox News and Rush Limbaugh have created really a situation of intimidation among Republicans, where it's now considered outlandish to believe in science. That's intentional. It's not because they believe it. You know, they have their talking points, and they're being paid to do it. So it is a tragic comedy that we're all paying a very big price for.
And mostly our children and grandchildren and beyond. And it's just so outrageous that for 15 years I've been trying to get on mainstream media, and I've literally been told that there's no way because the conservatives won't let a green show on. So I said, well, why is this, you know, about red versus blue and green gets lost in the middle? And I've been told by Westwood One, I've been told by Clear Channel executives, it's too hostile an environment for any show. I said, so because of that, Americans are being deprived of a program that might make a difference in addressing our environmental challenges. And I've been told in no uncertain terms, yes, that's the case. So I started America's Green Tea Party, and that's for those of us who are esteemed that they're playing politics with the planet, because for the first time, I don't believe that it's going to be, you know, logic and reason and science that is going to prevail, and that if people just had enough information and a little bit of inspiration, they would be as outraged as we are who've been paying attention. I really think with the Koch brothers, with the fossil fuel industry funding endlessly this garbage, these mouthpieces, it may not happen, not soon enough for me, and I'm glad you agree. Anyway, that's what I'm up to.
Of course, it really, you know, it really underscores the need for some major changes in, you know, how campaigns are funded, and, you know, decisions like Citizens United, you know, just help, you know, these corporate interests and these polluters just buy and pay for these guys.
It's clear, painfully, that our government is not leading the way out of the abyss, out of the darkness, and that's why there are places like Credo. Tell us about that, Michael, how it's grown and how effective you've been in getting word out to activists who will stop what they're doing and come to D.C. to really, you know, put their vote with their feet, if you will, and their mouths.
Sure. So the way that I like to think about Credo and Working Assets is that we're a social change organization whose advocacy activities are funded by a really great phone company. So at our heart, we're totally an activist group. We've been doing this work for a very long time. But given just how outrageous the world has become, our activism has grown very rapidly. So we now have a 2 million name member list that works on activism. It runs our environmental advocacy. We have a million name, that's half of our list, do environmental actions. We have the biggest environmental advocacy list of any group. And that's sort of shocking to lots of people, but it's because we do these harder, tougher actions. So on the tar sands, we have almost 200,000 people who have signed our petition to President Obama. We recruited nationally to get people to go to Washington, and over 200 people from Credo signed up to be arrested. I won't know till the end of the two-week period on September 3rd how many actually did. We're not looking for credit on this, but it is the case, I think, that we delivered more people to be arrested in this biggest climate change, civil disobedience, than any other group. So we've built and trained the best group of environmental activists in the entire country. And Elijah runs that, and it is just ironic that he did the fundraising online for the Obama campaign. Those skills are now building this political machine, and we're very hopeful about the outcome.
Okay, Michael, here's a chance to plug Credo and Working Assets. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I, for some reason, am on AT&T. I hate AT&T. How can I and how can anyone listening join Credo and Working Assets? It's time to, you know, just not waste a dollar or a moment, you know, in the wrong companies.
So, Betsy, I want to tell you and your listeners first that unknowingly you have become a big supporter of the Tea Party. Because AT&T is the biggest contributor to the House Tea Party Caucus. They're the biggest contributor. They also are the biggest contributor to Rick Perry. They've given Rick Perry over $400,000 in political contributions.
Okay, that does it.
So just to let you know, so it's really easy to sign up and find all about us. You go to www.credomobile.com. If you want to check out all our activism, you go to credoaction.com. We love activists, we love customers, and the two mix together really well.
Well, you've got me, this radio activist, because, first of all, Rick Perry, you mentioned the magic word name. I've been on it for over a year. About a year and a half ago, I was asked to speak at the Texas Women's Conference, and I met him. And when someone told me his position on climate science, I almost left before my panel, and I made a point on my green panel to be as outspoken as possible. Needless to say, I was not asked back, and the more I looked into it, as I followed the fires and the drought, you know, eating up his state, and he still adamantly, arrogantly believes, you know, climate change is not a problem, and it was pretty clear he was going to throw his hat into the presidential ring. How outrageous is that? Well, I think it was Earth Day. He was asking President Obama for FEMA funds to help his climate, you know, change-infused, battle-scarred state get back on its feet, and then praying for rain, all the while still, you know, actively, arrogantly declaring it's not real and he would not spend any federal dollars on it. How the height of outrageousness.
Well, you may be interested to know that his first senatorial endorsement came from James Inhofe, Mr. Climate Denier. So two peas in a pod, maybe that'll be his VP.
Inhofe Dumkopf. Well, thank you for that.
There you
and
go.
Elijah, do you have any connections in the White House where you can try to say, you know, we're watching you? I mean, just one more voice saying that to President Obama, you know, slip a memo to him and say, this is a litmus test and you're not going to have the environmental vote, you know, when you run for re-election if you do the wrong thing on this, since this has been made a real, as James Hansen said, line in the sand for Obama.
Yeah, I've talked to folks who work in the White House about this, and you know, they know and they understand. You know, I think those that I've talked to, you know, certainly hope that he will deny this.
And what's the time frame? When will you expect action?
They say that a decision is expected by the end of this year.
So what? You know,
it could come sooner. It could come in September.
And the protests are going to, I think, culminate this weekend, Saturday, September 3rd. After that, is anything planned that you're aware of? And if he does the wrong thing for some reason, then what? Is there any appeal opportunity, or is that going to be a done deal?
Well, it'll definitely not be a done deal.
Right. The point of these protests was to say that there are so many people who are ready to take the next step, and that this is just the beginning. And so I think if he doesn't reject this pipeline, there will be much more action and activism, and I think you'll see even more people getting involved.
And perhaps he'll join the Green Tea Party. One of our campaigns is going to be to get Sean Hannity offset. Talk about carbon offsets. I happen to have been on that show 5 or 6 times now, and it's just getting more and more outrageous. Go on to try to, you know, get some facts out there to their huge audience. And in today's Climate Progress, Joseph Rome's fabulous climate blog, there's an Australian scientist being quoted as saying the Murdoch media empire, which of course owns Fox, has cost humanity perhaps 1 or 2 decades in the battle against climate change. And they're still getting away with it. How outrageous is that?
I saw that post, and I thought it was a great one, and a call to action to the environmental community that Fox is itself the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The environmental community has not yet really targeted Fox to take on all of its deceptions. So I'm hopeful that they'll read that column and then join Media Matters and us in getting people to turn off Fox.
Especially as News Corp, you know, is down right now because of the phone hacking scandal. Let's kick them while they're down. They deserve it. And they can't be so duplicitous. I mean, when I heard that Murdoch had the News Corporation do a carbon offset program, carbon neutral program, while their mouthpieces are spewing garbage that is contributing to the ignorance, the willful selective ignorance on climate change, you know, and they're doing that really to bring in advertisers who would otherwise, you know, have to think twice. So they're talking out of both sides of their mouth, and it's costing lives, it's costing our children's future. That's where I think we should focus, you know, a large part of our efforts. At least that's my interest. I'm glad it is yours as well. And I was in D.C. 2 weeks ago meeting with Media Matters, and so hopefully we'll be hearing more about that. The other big story today, just on the cover of the New York Times, if anyone missed that, Exxon has just reached an Arctic oil deal with the Russians. Did you see that? So the Exxon, the biggest profiteer in the world, you know, record profits in the history of profits, corporate profits, just won a coveted prize in the global petroleum industry sweepstakes with an agreement to explore for oil in a Russian portion of the Arctic Ocean that's being opened up for drilling, even as Alaskan waters remain mostly off limits. What's wrong with this picture, guys? What are we going to do here?
Well, we're going to keep fighting. You never know when the other side will crumble. I mean, that's sort of the lesson of the Arab Spring. So we're going to keep fighting. The other part of the Exxon story, which didn't get reported so much, was that the offices of BP, which previously had most of the deals in Russia, were raided by the tax authorities today. So Russia kind of swings back and forth, and we'll work with our international allies on that one as well. I don't think this is good for global warming. So Exxon, we need to hold accountable as well.
And in addition to holding President Obama accountable, as you are, Vice President Joe Biden is quoted in Climate Progress today as saying, if we don't develop renewable energy, we will make the biggest mistake in this nation's history. So he gets it. He's got Obama's ear. Hopefully he will say and do something. I mean, this is how policy happens. Sometimes. Sometimes it's...
Sometimes. I mean, it is true. To give the Obama administration credit, that no administration has done nearly as much as they have on renewable energy. Tens of billions of dollars in funding. They're changing the rules. So there has been motion. The reason that we went to Washington to fight the tar sands project is the way the numbers work. If we develop all of the tar sands, it more than offsets every single thing the administration has already done, whether it's the fuel efficiency standards or the renewables. Those are all good things. All of them will be offset in the rise of CO2 from the tar sands. So the tragedy of that would get rid of every positive environmental legacy the administration has built so far. There's no need
profound.
To do that.
Profound. And the other ally that we know is there is, of course, hailing from the Bay Area, Energy Secretary Stephen Chu, who believes very much that climate change is a huge and serious problem. He was quoted today as saying, it saddens me that political leaders don't understand climate science. So hopefully these advisors that President Obama has around him will really get to him on this really critical issue, and this pipeline protest will have made a difference. And, you know, none other than NASA's James Hansen arrested now. So let's hope, guys, that reason prevails. The truth is on our side. That's what I tell myself when I am ready to throw in the towel. Plus, we know too much, so how can we give up, really? And we have kids and grandkids, and most of our listeners do, or have somebody, nephews, nieces, some place they love and hold dear. And, of course, all of that is threatened. And that's not dramatic hyperbole. It really is true. And we just have to turn this around. There's just no option. So thank you for all that you're doing out there with Credo online and in the nation's capital. Really means a lot to those of us who are, you know, wanting to be there and wanting to do more. And it is bringing attention to this very critical issue.
Thank you for all you do, and we'll invite you to future actions.
Please do. Please do. And we'll get you to a green tea party, Michael and Elijah. Thanks again. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with D.R. Tucker. He is the climate convert extraordinaire, my Republican friend who decided to read the International Governmental Panel on Climate Change, the 2007 report, and realized he'd been drinking the Kool-Aid, and that climate change not only is a big issue, but actually does need federal help, federal funding. So he is challenging all his libertarian friends. He and I are buddies. We want to do a show together. So we'll get him on in just a couple of minutes and get his latest top atrocities, latest in the climate capers from the media, from politics, from the environmental community. He really has it all. He's a great aggregator. He's going to be my chief blogger, chief infuser when we get the website up for America's Green Tea Party. Be right back. You're listening to The Green Front. I'm Betsy Rosenberg, and more coming up.